And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Attention writers and publishers. I got some good news and some bad news. While you'll always have a place to talk with me, the reading habits of the greater populace, the business models of book publishers, and the changes in technologies are a huge threat to your industry as you know it. That's the bad news. Again, don't blame me. You'll always be able to talk to me. But listen to our guest today, a man who the New Yorker says has a verbal humor that glistens. We'll see if it glistens today. We now welcome Michael Levin, founder and CEO of BusinessGhost.com and Business Ghost Inc. And he's a best-selling author who has written more than 100 books. A great number of them were ghostwritten. And he has predicted the extinction of books as we know them, but also some solutions. Michael Levin, welcome to the show.
Jabalani, thank you for having me on board.
Now, the first question I have for you is a doozy. Mr. Levin, if the publishing industry as we know it dies, as a ghostwriter, will you come back to haunt the culprits with witty prose?
That's a great question. The publishing industry is, in fact, dying. They are the dinosaurs, and the meteorite has hit the earth, and they just haven't figured it out yet. The New York publishing model really is in free fall. One of the top Canadian publishers just went bankrupt a couple of days ago. Publishing as we know it is dying, and the only people who really don't understand that simple fact are the New York publishers themselves.
Kansas City, what are your thoughts on the future of books? Do you think they'll continue to be around for the foreseeable months and years? You just heard that the New York publishing industry is dying. It's like a meteor hitting the earth, and they're dinosaurs, and they don't know what's going on, and they're T-Rexes and Triceratops just doing the robot or something. I got nothing. Have your own reading habits changed, though. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. What can be done to save books? Kansas City. You can also write in at centralstandard@kcur.org. Willie also pointed out in a comment on our Facebook page, technology saved the trees better than any environmental group. There's a lesson to be learned there. And we also have a tweet from John at KCURCST. That's our handle on Twitter. If I were a king for a day, book publishers would provide free ebooks with every purchase. This gives me tactile and mobile. You only have 140 characters there, so apparently, it gives him tactile and mobile. Thank you very much, John, for your contribution to the conversation. What do you think about these arguments in favor of technology and environment?
Oh, sure. I guess as an author, I'm in favor of killing trees and then replacing them with as many more trees as you can. The reality is that the traditional publishing model doesn't work anymore. It's the idea that a publisher is going to risk an advance to an author, and then risk the money that it takes to choose a book, edit it, print it, put it on trucks, gasoline, drivers, into bookstores in Kansas City and around the country, around the world, and then hope that somebody buys that physical book, takes it home, and pays for it before they take it home. And then some other book will come in and take its place, and they'll sell that too. And then the thing is that if the book doesn't sell, it goes back to New York on another truck, either to be pulped or resold as a bargain book. That model simply doesn't work. Now, the publishers have done a lot of things to try to deal with the Internet, but nothing they've done has really worked. But instead, what they've tried to do to recognize the fact that they're making less money because people are reading fewer books is that they buy books and they publish books that have really good marketing plans as opposed to really good content. So they've cheapened the value of books. People are reading books today that they buy either online or physical books or e-books, and they're paying for the entire album, but they're only getting a single's worth of information. They're only getting a chapter or two of really solid information, and the rest is just sort of hamburger helper to stretch the thing out. That's not going to work. Yeah.
It's interesting, Michael Levin, that you talk about the business model. I have a personal anecdote on the business model as far as publishers throwing away money. I actually received advances on two books that actually never came out, but I didn't have to recoup the advances. So it wasn't a significant amount of money, but it was money sort of just given away. There was some effort, but there was no recoup on the other end. I don't want to name the publisher. Let's just say it rhymes with Mopper Bollins.
Mopper Bollins.
Yeah,
is owned by,
right.
Yeah,
I'm
hearing you, Jabalani.
Yeah, so that's the point, right?
Well, that's exactly the point. And Mopper Bollins that you mentioned is owned by an Australian company that rhymes with Muse Corp.
Right, right.
And I got to tell you something. Rupert Murdoch owns HarperCollins. He owns News Corp. There is no other place in Rupert Murdoch's empire where English majors are spending Uncle Rupert's money on stuff that has gone through no marketing whatsoever. Any other business, they test market products before they release them.
Right.
And if the and then they test the results, and then they market the heck out of the product once they do release it. Book publishing does neither. They just simply go with the gut feelings of the editors at the publishing houses. I think this will sell, and hope for the best. You cannot cross your fingers to make money in this economy. You cannot do it by clicking your heels three times. That stuff might have worked before the Great Recession, but it doesn't work anymore, and that's still how publishers do business, and that's why they're doomed.
To publishers out there, flooding the coffers of public radio doesn't work too well either. You can get your book on the show, but it's not exactly a sustainable model, is it there?
Well, it's really not. The sad reality is that most people don't buy books anymore. And there are people I know who are listening to this and saying, that's outrageous. I buy a lot of books. I go on Amazon. I go to my bookstore. I buy a ton of books every month. Well, McDonald's has a term for people like you. It's called heavy user.
Right.
And the thing is that heavy users are people who, you know, they eat the supersized meals once or twice a day. They're in there 30 times a month. Heavy users think everyone else on the planet is a heavy user, too, because that's all they see when they go to McDonald's. When you go to a bookstore, you see other people buying books. When if you buy a lot of books, so do your friends. Those are the people you've selected to be your peers. But the thing is that the rest of the world doesn't operate that way. The rest of the world doesn't buy books. As we move from the bookstore to technology platforms, whether it's an iPad or an iPod or anything, people don't expect to pay for information online. They expect it to be free. And so now you're saying, okay, what you used to pay $25 for, we want you to pay $10 for, $8 for, $3 for online. And people are saying, I don't think so. All I really need is a little bit of information about a topic. I'll just go to Wikipedia. I don't need 300 pages or 400 or 500 pages on a topic. I don't need that much information. And as a result, people are buying fewer books. And so online and the e-book, the iBook, that's not the salvation of the publishing industry. That's the death knell for it.
And to your point, you talked about people just going to Wikipedia or expecting the information online to be free. You've stated the obvious several times in public and in public statements and on shows such as this. You say the main crux of that point is that attention spans are diminishing. Tell us about how that hurts books. This is a sort of esoteric, tangible thing.
Jablonda, you're exactly right. The American attention span, or I guess the attention span of the average human being on the planet, has plummeted. I mean, they may not even be paying attention to us right now. The reality is that as technology shortens communication into tweets, into texts, into short emails, we have lost the capacity to enjoy and produce sustained thought. This means that we just don't think as well or as much or as often as we used to. And then when we're reading, the idea of sitting down there and plowing through a document that's 300 pages in length, unless it's a Grisham novel or the new Tom Wolfe novel or something like that comes out that people like, by and large, people don't have the time. They don't have the interest. They don't have the desire. And we are losing the mental capacity to think in a sustained way. This is going away. And this is disastrous for society as a whole because the less people think for themselves, the easier it is for them to be controlled and have their thoughts dictated to them by government or by business or by the military or any other unseen force. So it doesn't bode well. It's not great news.
And to that point, there's also this sort of platform-agnostic way to get books now. Books are moving to devices such as Kindle and Nook, and to some extent, the iPad. I know someone, for instance, who was reading Shades of Grey on a free PDF file. Talk about the multi-platform approach and how that changes book consumption and, by extension, therefore, the business.
Yeah, when you buy a book, when you buy a physical book, all you can do with it is read the book. You can't hit a button on the book and check your stocks. You can't hit a button on the book and communicate with a friend or go to Netflix. When you buy a book on a device, all of a sudden you're reading it in an environment that has a million possible distractions. You can check your stocks. You can check the weather. You can book a flight. You can watch a movie. You can download stuff you shouldn't be downloading. You can do anything you want.
Right.
So So it makes it even harder for you to stay focused on the task of reading the book. So that's why I say that when you move to all these different platforms, it's very exciting because now you can get your book on the go and you can read it in the airport. You don't have to carry 10 books with you or anything like that. But the thing is that are you even going to finish one nonfiction book? My suspicion is that most people have downloaded a bunch of books. They intend to get around to reading them, and at some point, they just don't. And once you've got all that stuff on your device, you're going to say, you know something, I don't think I'm going to buy any more books till I've read the ones I've got. But if you don't read the ones you've got, you're never going to buy another book. That's why I say that these devices don't really help people, don't really help publishers and authors who are trying to get their books out.
Michael, for one, I don't dig those devices because I prefer to have bookshelves that smell of rich cherry oak in my home.
Mm.
So, you know, that's the deal there. That's how I roll. You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. The question of the day is, are books doomed for extinction? That's the question of the day. And our guest is Michael Levin, founder and CEO of Business Ghost Incorporated, a best-selling author who's written more than 100 books. A great number of them have been ghostwritten, and he has predicted the extinction of books as we know them. Kansas City, what are your thoughts on the future of books? Do you think they'll continue to be around for the foreseeable months and years? And have your own reading habits changed because of the technological revolutions, the attention spans diminishing, or any other factors that Mr. Levin has been talking about on today's program? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. And you can also email in at centralstandard@kcur.org, and we'll read your comments, which is something our guest claims a lot of people just aren't doing anymore, is reading. And we're going to go to Mike and Shawnee for the conversation right now. Mike, welcome to Central Standard.
Hey, good morning, Jabalani. Michael, I don't dispute the observations you make. I'm as troubled by them as you are. In my experience, when I'm trying to figure out whether a new technology is going to replace an old one, I always just kind of reverse the order of introduction in my mind. If color photography had come before black and white, who would have ever thought of black and white? And I think it's probably true that if e-books had come before the printed page, I don't think anyone, it's not intuitive to follow that someone would have invented the printing on a piece of paper and binding them in a book and so forth. My big problem with, and it's not going to change it just because it's a problem with me, but how will a new author ever get started? If you can't go to Barnes & Noble or the Strand in New York or somewhere and browse the shelves by genre and so forth, how will a new author ever get started? What have we done to ourselves?
Yeah, Mike, those are excellent, excellent points. And the problem for new authors, Jabalani, is really, really intense because it's true. There are only Barnes & Nobles left. That's really the last major bookstore chain standing.
Right.
The thing is that most people go to Amazon to buy books. Amazon is the death of browsing. It used to be you go to a bookstore, you come in with one book that you want, and you wander around and you pick up six more books that, two, three, four, five, six books that you hadn't even thought of. And that's how you find new authors. Today, you go on Amazon, you get what you want, and then they recommend other books, but typically they're in the same field or the same genre. So it's much harder for new authors to be found through browsing. Also, newspapers have all but disappeared. There are fewer places where books are reviewed. There are fewer places where books are advertised. The good news for new authors is that social media exists, and you can build your own tribe. I mean, the average first novel has only sold about 5,000 copies historically in the United States. So a person can go out there, write the novel, write the nonfiction book, and then just go like crazy on social media and develop what Seth Godin calls a tribe, a crew of people who really, really like and relate to the material. So you can find your tribe through Facebook, through Twitter, through all the different social media platforms, and that's what authors have to do. Authors never really liked the fact that publishers really wouldn't lift a finger for most books and that the author had to do his or her own marketing. But today, that hasn't changed. Today, publishers aren't even publishing first novels in physical form. If you get a deal with Simon & Schuster for a first novel, chances are they'll only do it as an e-book. So you still have the problem of doing your own marketing. The good news is that with social media, you can get attention for a new book as never before. It's never been cheaper or easier for an author. And the whole, when I say publishing as we know it is dying, the difference is that now there's the opportunity for authors to do everything themselves, to publish the book themselves online, to market the book themselves online, to use social media to get the word out. So it's a good time for authors to just bypass New York entirely, do it themselves, and get word out about their books.
And to set up this next question, Michael Levin, our guest, by the way, is Michael Levin, founder and CEO of Business Ghost. He's a best-selling author and someone who's very passionate about publishing and books and has predicted the extinction of books as we know them, but said there's some hope if we would just start reading as a society again. And as a preface to this next question, Michael, I'd like to give a shout out to the Strand Bookstore in Union Square there in New York, yes, which is next to Prospero's Bookstore here on 39th Street, one of the best independent sellers of books I've seen anywhere in the world. So Prospero's in the Strand, and those are good places for young writers and enthusiastic readers to go. But those are diminishing as well. You say one of the saving graces here is for publishers to stop going after the mass market and do what?
Well, publishers have to target niche markets. And the publishers who do that the best are going to be the ones who survive the coming shakeout. I guarantee you that as soon as Rupert Murdoch meets his maker, his kids are going to close down HarperCollins in a New York Minute because they have a brand. HarperCollins is a brand that doesn't stand for anything. Simon & Schuster is a brand that doesn't stand for anything in particular in the mind of the book buyer. On the other hand, there's a publisher called Regnery. They sell books to conservative readers. If you see the word Regnery on a conservative book and you're a conservative, you buy the book. You trust the brand. Harlequin is a very, very trusted brand for readers of romance novels. So the publishers who have brands that actually stand for something in the readers' minds are the ones who are going to succeed. When you think about the car industry, if I say Mercedes, you know exactly what that brand stands for. If I say Hyundai, you know exactly what that brand stands for. In practically every industry on the planet, you know what a successful brand stands for. The New York publishers have failed to differentiate their brands and make them stand for something. And the expression is that if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. And since those brands don't mean anything to consumers, those publishers really don't have a reason to exist. And that's why I say they're still going. It's going to take a few years more before the lights finally go out, but the lights are going to go out on the publishers who do not create strong, strong niche audiences for themselves. They're all going to die.
That seems intuitive. If an average bestseller for a first-time novelist, or for that matter, a first-time nonfiction writer, is probably even less than 5,000 copies sold, why have publishers not already taken that cue to go get the tribes on social media and other electronic platforms, or find a subject matter that they can master, such as the Harlequin romance novel that you just mentioned? This seems like a no-brainer. Why haven't they done that?
It's a no-brainer because they have no brains. I hate to say it, but Javelani, I mean, the New York publishing industry is dumber than rocks. They just don't get it. They think that this recession or this transformation that they're going through is like all the other ones that they've been through in the past. They're too arrogant to change. They're too scared to change. They're stuck in their ways. They only see each other. Manhattan is the publishing industry is a very small place. It's sort of an echo chamber. They just repeat to each other the platitudes, and they think that it's going to be business as usual. The thing is that until the internet came along, they had a hammerlock on marketing books and publishing books. And today, because of the internet, anyone can publish and market his or her own book. They don't have a reason for existing. And it used to be that the publishing houses were all separately owned. They were owned by individual guys who had elbow patches on their jackets in the 40s, and then they all merged in the 80s, and then in the 90s they were all bought by international conglomerates. There are basically eight companies, one in Australia, one in France, one in Germany, one in the United States, and these eight companies own all of the publishing, pretty much all of the major publishing houses in the United States and around the world. And what this means is that these places, these international conglomerates, they look at each division and they say, is this division making money? And at some point they're going to say, why do we have a publishing house on our balance sheet when it doesn't make money the same way all the other things that we own do make money? And that's when the first one's going to fall, and then the next one, and then the next one. And if I were in publishing right now, I'd be looking for an exit, because the jobs in publishing are not going to be there for much longer. They lost tens of thousands of jobs in the 2008 recession. And I'd say anybody else in publishing is really on the knife blade when it comes to future employment, because if their industry goes away, their jobs are going to go away too.
I think you could say the same thing could be said for newspapers, where the management was kind of haughty, thought changes weren't coming as soon as they did, didn't anticipate the recession, and sort of walked around as a loss leader for a long time, and then media conglomerates take over, and they're a loss leader, and they don't want to lead losses. So
yeah.
That's the point there.
Javelin, you're exactly right. At some point, people are sick and tired of losing money. Now, with newspapers, it was Craigslist, of all things.
Right.
It came away and just sucked all of the classified ad revenue that newspapers relied on away from the newspapers. And as a result, newspapers got smaller or they died. And that's a trend. You know, here in Orange County, California, they're hiring reporters. I don't know whose money they're hiring them with.
What, the Register's hiring?
Yeah, the Register. There's a piece today. Somebody sent me a piece this morning that the Orange County Register is hiring print reporters. And I'm like, is this story from the 1940s? How could that be? But by and large, the money went out of newspapers, and the money is really going out of people paying for content. And this means that it's sort of troubling for authors, because it used to be that an author's goal was to create a revenue stream by writing and selling books. But today, authors have to scramble a little more and think a little harder and say, okay, I'm going to do a book. I'm either going to self-publish or I'm going to get a deal. But then at that point, what is the book going to be? That book is my loss leader. The book is my business card. And that's kind of what I do in my company. We, at Business Coast, we create books for people who don't seek to sell books. I tell my clients, you're not trying to be a best-selling author. You want to be a best-earning author. And the way that works is that you use a book as a way of showing the world how much you know. And as a result, they come to you for consulting, they come to you for coaching, they come to you for your products, your services. But the thing is that even for authors, the revenue stream is no longer going to be the book. People want information for free or for next to nothing. It's unsustainable for almost everybody except John Grisham and Stephen King to think, I'm going to make my money writing books. No, you're going to write the book, and then you're going to make your money. John Assaroff, who was in The Secret, says it best. He said, charge whatever you can for the book, and then charge $1 million for you to come to their house and explain what you said in the book. That's the model.
That is the model. We're going to go to Nina in Kansas City, Missouri. Nina, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, yes, thanks. Thanks for the show. I'm a graduate student, and I absolutely love books. And I've never come close to reading a Stephen King or John Grisham book. But a year and a half ago, I got a smartphone, and I realized I started reading a lot of information during the day on my smartphone. And I started realizing that my smartphone was making me stupid. I noticed my vocabulary, like, diminishing. And I just absolutely have stopped reading my smartphone, have gone back to all my books, and it's helped me concentrate better. My vocabulary is improving again. And literally in that short of amount of time, I realized how this instant information and tiny blips was like deteriorating my brain.
Thank you very much, Nina, for your comment. We're running a little low on time here. I want to talk a little bit, Michael Levin, about your revolutionary solution to saving the publishing industry and authors everywhere. Read more.
Yeah, reading more is the key. And if you have kids, reading to them when they're small is the key, because the parents, study after study shows that parents who read to their children turn their kids into readers going forward. And the people who are reading, the 2 or 3% of people in society who are actually reading books or whatever shape the book takes next, those are the ones who are going to be succeeding and dominating and leading society. So there's no question but that reading is the most important thing, and reading to your kids is vital. The New York publishing industry cannot be saved, and it really doesn't need to be saved. We don't need it anymore. We don't need buggy whips because we don't drive buggies. We don't need the publishing industry because they failed at their job. They were supposed to pick out the best things for us to read and then sell them to us. They don't do that anymore. They don't do that at all. So the future really belongs to the individual writer who gets his stuff up there on Kindle or on Amazon or on Lulu or on WordPress or on any of the areas where you can publish your own book and then go out there and market the heck out of it using social media and traditional media and getting on your show, Javelani, and talking about the book. And the other thing that we do at Business Ghost every day of the week is we help people get their messages out by turning what they have to say into a book that will be something that shows the world who they are, what they know, and how they can help other people.
Our guest is Michael Levin, founder and CEO of Business Ghost. He's predicted the extinction of books as we know them, but said there's some hope if we would just start reading as a society again. And John tweets in at KCURCST, the model for self-publishing is that he hopes to see a self-published model like the recent online release of Louis C.K., who, by the way, hates Kansas City. The money belongs in the pocket of the author, John tweets. So that's some good advice from John and some very good advice from Michael Levin. Michael Levin, thank you for coming.
Javelani, I really enjoyed meeting you, and thanks for the time.
Our show is produced by Danny Alexander with help from Tamika Weatherspoon. Up to Date is next with animal behavior expert Wayne Hunthausen. I'm Javelani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.